Let me begin with thanks and a disclaimer. First of all, thanks to Catherine Baldwin and all of your team at CEDA, first of all for giving me the honour of writing a paper in this publication, and also for producing such a high quality and timely paper as you have on this occasion. Second, a disclaimer. I'm here today to talk about the Defence Industry Policy Review, but I do not speak for the review nor for the government. Everything I say is entirely on the basis of my private capacity. What I'd like to try and do, I cover three things. First of all, why do we need a defence industry policy? Second, what is the review going to do and what does it hope to achieve? And finally, I want to go through some of the challenges and key issues that I think the review will have to grapple with if it's to achieve what it wants to do. So why do we need a defence industry policy? Well, first and foremost, it's a recognition of the fact that industry is an essential component of strategic military capability for a nation. You take a tank, you take an aircraft, without trained personnel, without doctrine for its use, and without the right support, the ability to repair, maintain, upgrade, adapt, and if necessary, produce in some cases the capability, you've gone nowhere. This is true for any country, but it's especially true for Australia. Especially true for us because we have a long-standing doctrine of defence self-reliance, and moreover, it derives from our geography. There are certain things which are impractical for us to be dependent on overseas suppliers for. The second reason we need a defence industry policy is that the same reason we have any other industry policy. The government has a responsibility to nurture economic activity in the country and also to nurture and support exports from Australia. In the case of defence industry, it needs special attention. It needs special attention because the customers for defence goods and services are overseas militaries and overseas governments. And that means that the government has to have a different approach because of the military-to-military and government-to-government aspects of military sales, a different approach to what it has for the remainder of its export portfolio. So why do we need a defence industry policy at this point? Well, let me go through some of the external factors that drive us to look for a defence industry policy at the moment. Since the end of the Cold War, there's been a global consolidation of defence production right across the globe. That's given us, as a nation, a different set of challenges to deal with in acquiring military capability. Within capability itself, we're seeing rising costs. It costs more to buy a combat aircraft today than it did 10 years ago. And that's being accompanied by shrinking economies of scale, which is feeding back into the consolidation and, once again, reducing the options that we have available to us. At the same time, the technological sophistication of military equipment is increasing, and we need to adapt our industry policy to make sure we can deal with that new challenge. One of the consequences of these changes is that global supply chains and international programs are becoming increasingly prevalent. The sort of strategies that might have worked for Australia in the mid-80s are no longer going to cut the mustard. We have to have strategies for defence industry policy that take account of the way in which arms production is going globally. And finally, in terms of external factors, there's a shrinking manufacturing base in Australia. That means we're less able to leverage existing activities in the civil sector in Australia to support defence capability. But there's also some internal factors driving the need for a defence industry policy. To begin with, there's a clear perception, as Professor Dibb outlined, that our policy is adrift, or at very least, its implementation is adrift. The 2001 initiatives by the then Minister Peter Reith have at very least lost momentum or have come to very little at this point in time. And there's also a paradox facing us at the moment. At a time when the government has made a very firm, decade-long commitment to at least, as we heard from the Minister this morning, continue defence funding increases at 3% per annum, there's a lot of uncertainty about just what the goals are in terms of defence industry policy. On many occasions, people in defence industry have come to me and said, we're dealing with a particular problem and a particular project, and the problem is we're not really sure what the government's goals are from an industry perspective. We can put together a range of different packages. Just tell us what sort of package that you put priorities on, and we will deliver that. That sort of uncertainty is in nobody's interests, not in the government's, in industry's or the nation's interest. And finally, this, I think it's fair to say, some frustration with notwithstanding the successes of the Kinnaird reforms, there's still some frustration with the processes and procedures which underpin defence procurement. So it was no surprise when Brendan Nelson, the Minister, announced a policy review to, in his own words, deliver a transparent, innovative and economically prudent framework that explains how the government makes defence procurement decisions. To achieve this, he's asked the Minister assisting, and also the Minister for Veteran Affairs, Mr Bruce Bilson, to take charge of a review. To support the Minister assisting, there's a review team being formed, of which I'm one member. The other members of the team include Kerry Clark, who's the head of Industry Division in the Defence Material Organisation, Lucio Bartolomeo, who of course has a long history in defence industry here in Australia and brings a commercial and industry perspective that's invaluable to the team, and a private sector consulting economist, Henry Ergas. The review kicked off in mid-May in Sydney with a roundtable headed by Minister Nelson, and at that point he set off a chain of events which began with the production of a discussion paper, which is available on the net and I commend to you, but I should say you should also read it in consultation at the same time with the CEDA paper, which I think brings out a whole range of other issues in far more detail than the discussion paper does, which is one of the reasons why the CEDA paper is a very timely contribution to the debate. The discussion paper then provided a basis for a series of consultative roundtables around the country. First one was in Adelaide. Since then, we've had roundtables in Darwin, Townsville, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. Next week, we have Canberra. The week after, Hobart and Perth. These roundtables have been lively and, for me, very surprising events. There's been a large diversity of participants, from CEOs of the large prime contractors down to, as one participant described himself, he's the S in SME. Very small firm at the lowest end of the spectrum. Within these roundtables, there's been a lot of things coming out on the table, and one of the things I'd like to make clear today, given the very critical nature and appropriately critical nature of a lot of the discussion, is that there's a lot of positive stories coming out there. There's a lot of people who are doing business with DMO and coming away very satisfied that they're doing a good job. There's also a lot of prime contractors and a lot of SMEs who've developed great partnerships and are moving forward both to their common benefit and to the generation of exports. So I just want to say that from what I've seen so far, there is a lot of good news out there. There is a lot being achieved, and we shouldn't lose sight of that when we begin looking at defence industry policy. Having said that, there are still frustrations. There are lost opportunities. There are areas where clarity is compromising people getting the optimum solution because they don't really know what the goalposts are. And these are areas where we really need to address the problem. In the process, I've learnt a lot. My thinking has evolved on a range of issues. Most of all, it's reinforced to me the complexity of the problem. The diversity of views that people bring to the roundtables is as diverse as the number of levels there are in a supply chain and the number of stages there are in a procurement process. Wherever anyone is, they bring to the table a different and equally valid set of perspectives. Well, out of this, we hope to conclude the review within 3 months of June when the Minister kicked it off. That means a September deadline, with a view to having a consultation of the paper leading to government consideration and a new policy by the end of the year. Let me now go through and say what I think some of the challenges and issues are that the policy review has to deal with. First and foremost, and echoing Professor Dibb's points earlier this morning, is to find out what the goals are. Clarify what it is we want to achieve from defence industry policy. This can be classified in two broad categories. First of all, there's a set of military strategic goals that we need to get clear. There are some defence industry capabilities, as we've heard this morning, that are essential to maintaining our sovereign independence. We need to know what they are before we can begin working on strategies to achieve them. There are some industry capabilities we need as a simple practicality of being an island continent located at the southern periphery of Asia. We need to understand what these are in the context of likely military operations in the future to ensure we have the support that we need. And finally, as many speakers have said, we need to work out what industry capabilities there are which will give us the capability edge. Where are the areas where we want to go the extra mile, have the ability to update, to modify, to maintain a capability edge that's going to be decisive on the modern battlefield? Now, I don't think the review, in the time it has, will be able to answer all those questions. But it will have failed if it doesn't at least put in place a mechanism to do that once and then update it in a routine basis going forward. Just as we update our strategic policy, we need to go back and recheck to ensure that our industry policy remains congruent with it over time as our circumstances evolve. There's also a set of goals that could broadly come under the heading of national interest. It is naive to think that governments do not want to get dual use out of the defence dollar. In many cases, the government wants to achieve regional development goals, industry enhancement goals, wants to move Australia into export markets, move Australia into areas where we can exploit our competitive advantage internationally to carry the economy forward. And defence is no different to any other area of commercial activity in Australia, and no less deserving of the government's consideration in those areas. Second area we're going to have to look at closely is the role of competition. Here I think everyone agrees it's a matter of horses for courses. There is no one solution that across every single acquisition we might look at will give us a good outcome. At the moment, about 50% by value and 50% by number of DMO contracts are delivered non-competitively. And it's not hard to see why. In many cases, interoperability with our allies or the existence of unique solutions in the marketplace drive us to sole source. The JSF is an example, the Collins Combat System is another example, the Aegis Combat System for the air warfare destroyer, the heavyweight torpedo, I dare say all of the weapons, or almost all of the weapons on the air warfare destroyer will be decided very simply on the basis of interoperability and the uniqueness of the solution. In terms of through-life support, there's a lot of areas where sole sourcing is occurring because it would be dumb to do otherwise. Here in South Australia, ASC has the through-life support contract for the Collins. Well, of course they do. We built ASC in the process of building the Collins-class submarines. It was always part of the strategy to have them doing the through-life support. But there's other areas where competition is clearly the right strategy. In particular, Australia is in a unique position to play the Europeans off against the Americans. And we've done this in a series of high-profile and successful competitions. The air-to-air refuelling contest, the armed reconnaissance helicopter, the initial contest for the troop lift helicopter. We exploited the international marketplace, applied competitive pressures, and got a solution which suited Australia. But there's a bit left over. There's a bit that isn't clearly in the category of let's use competition, or isn't in the category of it's clear we just go with this manufacturer. There's a grey area. And working out how to navigate ourselves through the grey area is one of the challenges for the review. And just as false competition, confecting a competition when there really isn't one, is wasteful for industry, wasteful for defence, consumes unnecessary time, it's equally a false economy to forego competition when a viable competition can be found. The trick is working out which strategy to use in which instance. Just quickly, some of the other things the review will have to do. It'll have to be careful to avoid focusing on prime contractors alone. It's well known that SMEs provide a lot of flexibility, a lot of innovation, and a lot of export potential here in Australia. The tricky part is working out what sort of levers, what sort of tools defence can apply to enhance appropriately those SMEs that are critical to our strategic posture and also most worthy of support for exports and for further economic benefit. Skills, as one questioner noted this morning, are a very important area. One of the things I've been very pleased to learn in the roundtables is that defence industry spends a lot on developing skills. The SAIDI program that defence has put together has also helped, but I fear in the final analysis the skills issue is a national problem that will require a national solution. The biggest challenge for the review is finding ways to achieve the goals. What are the mechanisms that we can put our finger on, which are practical, which will allow the government and defence to nurture, create, shape the defence industry that it needs to support capabilities? The only real tool there is through procurements. And that's one of the areas we'll have to be looking at very closely. But procurements are not simply a tool for shaping industry. They're also the principal mechanism through which defence interacts with industry. And it's an area where, in and of itself, there's some issues to be looked at. There's the problem of overprescription. In many cases, I've talked to people in industry and they've been bewildered by the level of specific detail that's being put forward in a tender, which ties their hands from providing innovative and lateral solutions to deliver the capability outcome. There's the burden of paperwork. Many defence tenders are measured in tens of thousands of pages. I'm yet to meet anyone who seriously thinks they are read with a great deal of attention and that a rationalisation of this ponderous overhead would not be to everyone's benefit. There's also the vexed issue of risk transfer. How much risk can a firm be asked to take on? Who's best placed to carry risk in projects? Should the Commonwealth, in effect, be self-insuring when it comes to defence acquisitions? These things here are not simply housekeeping issues. They're fundamental issues to defence industry, and if nothing else, they present hurdles for new entrants into defence industry. There's many firms I've talked to outside of the defence sector who say, you know, we really find it hard to even get a look in because we don't understand just how this labyrinth works. Well, hurdles like that ultimately lead to economic inefficiency. So let me conclude. There are lots of challenges ahead, and the challenges come in a diverse range of shapes and forms. But I agree with Professor Dibb. What we need is a policy that sets out some overarching principles. Reconciling some overarching principles with the complexity of the defence industry policy process and spectrum is going to be a big challenge. We need ideas. The review team has a mechanism to receive submissions via the web, or if you're in Canberra, give me a call. We'll go have a cup of coffee. I'll talk to you face to face. We need ideas, especially ideas about how to achieve the goals in practical ways that can be implemented. The last thing the review team can afford to do is put forward proposals which suffer the same fate of the list of previous reviews that the Minister listed this morning. At the end of the day, what we want to achieve, as the Minister put it, is a government-endorsed policy that is realistic, achievable and transparent, accountable and transparent basis for planning and decision-making that sets out priorities, objectives and values for defence industry. Thank you.